Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Whether you went to theaters for The Woman King, hosted a watch party for Fire Island, cried during Everything Everywhere All at Once, or got caught up in the hype surrounding Doctor Strange,
the fate of the multiverse depends on us.
We want to hear about your year at the movies, and we'll get recommendations from a panel of film critics about what to watch during a little downtime, hopefully, over the holidays. Forum is next, after this news. I'm Mina Kim. Welcome to Forum. Black Panther: Wakanda Forever has been number one in theaters for several weekends. Have you seen it? What movies did you watch this year? Did you seek out films that had something to say about where we are now, or films that let you escape? Here's what listener David said.
My nomination for a movie for the year is Amsterdam. The acting was very good. All the actors were wonderful. The time period is interesting, and it's just very well done movie.
Well, you too can tell us what movie made your 2022 and why. Call 866-733-6786. Post it on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at KQED Forum. And if you missed a lot of this year's releases and want to know what to watch from our panel of film critics, let me tell you who they are. Dave Schilling is back with us, contributing writer for LA Times Image. Dave, welcome back to Forum.
Thank you, as always, for having me. It is a pleasure.
It's a pleasure for us, too. Jackson Kim Murphy is associate news editor at Variety. Welcome to Forum, Jackson.
Howdy. Howdy. Thanks for having me. This should be fun.
Glad to have you. And Kristen Meinzer, co-host of the podcast Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. Glad to have you back, too.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back.
So, Kristen, kick us off. What was one of your favorite films from this year?
Oh, my gosh. It's hard to just pick one. There were a lot of movies I really liked this year, but I especially liked Emily the Criminal, starring Aubrey Plaza as a person who doesn't necessarily have a perfect track record, who has tens of thousands of dollars in student loan debt, who is dealing with major economic hardship, and who decides to become a criminal. It is a movie that I think speaks to the times right now, with a lot of us feeling economic hardship, where the divide between rich and poor is just growing greater, more vast. And to cheer for somebody who is, you know, maybe trying to screw the system a little bit, maybe trying to get ahead, even if it's not in the quote unquote right way. I had a great time watching this. It is compact. It is snappy. And I was cheering for her the whole time.
When you say compact, you mean not too long?
Yes, because that's one of the trends I have absolutely abhorred in recent years, especially 2022. Too many movies were over 2.5 hours long, and we don't need that. We have only so much time in the day, right? Do we really need a 2-hour and 41-minute movie? I'm talking to you, Black Panther. We don't need our movies that long. We don't.
Jackson, can you share one of your favorites?
Yeah. It feels silly to shout it out, but Steven Spielberg's The Fablemans was one of my favorite films this year. Another heater from one of our best. I was always really excited for it. I consider myself like a huge fan and an acolyte, but it even exceeded my high expectations of it. It's his semi-autobiographical, largely autobiographical film about his adolescence and growing up. About his parents' gradual divorce, about his family falling apart, and about his love of movies. Mm. Like a lot of my favorite Spielberg films, there's a sort of sickness at the center of it. He needs to make movies. He needs to put a camera in between himself and the world. But it's also this film about like this very natural talent that for him, like he needs, like he loves making movies, and how that can complicate your relationships with your family, how that can deepen your bond with those around you, and they can support you, and how, as they support you, those, the people that they that love you, can like lose you even more as you go and become your own person. I found it really tremendously moving. It's super sweeping. It is a hair over 2.5 hours long, but I do think it earns it.
Yeah, I think you said it was like one of the best of Spielberg's movies, which that would be saying a lot, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, this guy made Jaws. He makes a lot of good movies. But I do think it's one of his best. It is the movie that he sort of danced around making his entire career. There's a lot of broken households and absentee fathers and single mothers throughout his filmography, drawing from his own adolescence. And this is the film that he's finally grown in. Like, he's grown into the filmmaker that he was going to be to make this movie. It's taken a really long time, but I'm glad he finally told the story that he really wanted to tell.
Wow. Okay. Dave, one of your top films of the year.
Oh, boy. So I think a lot of people agree with me that it's nice for a movie to surprise you every once in a while, not to like break the format too much of what makes a great movie, but at least a moment or two where you're genuinely shocked that the movie has taken a left turn. And the movie that does that the most effectively this year is Barbarian, which is a small horror movie that kind of didn't really seem like it was going to be a whole heck of a lot. The trailers make it seem like this is a movie about an Airbnb mix-up where two people are double booked for an Airbnb and something sinister is going to happen. And that's it. The trailers were very respectful of the twist of the movie. And not every movie needs a twist, but movies need to surprise you. They need to shake you out of your comfort zone and make you sit up and pay attention. And Barbarian does that about 40 minutes in. It becomes a totally different movie. And that is just so exciting to see it done well, because this is hard. When you go to film school like I did, they tell you to follow the structure, the three-act structure, and certain things need to happen in certain places in a screenplay, in a movie. And this film eschews all of that to say, we're going to take you on a journey, on a ride, and you're going to have to reorient yourself halfway through the movie and meet brand new characters. I won't say any more than that because we were told very specifically by you, no spoilers. Please see this movie. I think a lot of people did. It was very successful for the studio because of how cheap it was, but it wasn't a mega super blockbuster like a Marvel movie. So there are still people out there, I'm sure, who haven't seen it yet. Go find it wherever it is streaming. I think it's on HBO Max. So check it out. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, please don't send me a dirty tweet about how it's actually on Amazon Prime. I don't know, actually.
No dirty tweets. But thank you for telling us how we can watch it, because that's always helpful. And so if that's something that listeners, as you share with us, the films that you enjoyed in 2022, and it may not be as obvious how you can see it, please tell us that. This listener writes, the worst movie, The Woman King, too cheesy, Hollywood and so unbelievable. The best, Everything Everywhere All the Time. Maybe they meant to say all at once, unless there's a movie I'm not aware of. So original, funny, creative, great cast and meaningful. Runner up, Black Panther. Such amazing costuming, well-developed story and exciting. Well, thank you, listener, for those recommendations. Thank you, listener Dave, for telling us how much you appreciated the acting in the movie Amsterdam, which makes me want to ask, Kristen, what was a standout performance from this year? A film where you really appreciated the acting?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, I have to say that one of the movies I really loved the acting in was Pearl, starring Mia Goth. She stars as somebody who, during the 1918 flu, and it's very much parallel to what's happening in the world with our current pandemic, she's feeling isolated. She is alone in a rural area. She doesn't have a lot of contact with people outside of her own family. And Mia Goth is pretty much in every single scene in this movie. She carries the whole thing. And you see how she is unraveling in this movie. You see that she's grasping at straws. She's dreaming of bigger, better things. She's losing herself in the fantasy of maybe becoming a movie star. And the way the movie is filmed is so magical. It is so delightful. It has such a colorful, vibrant aesthetic. And yet what's happening inside of her is so dark, and she reveals her, you know, inner workings in some of the most surprising ways. There is one scene where the camera is fixed on her and she just talks for like 2 minutes straight and the camera doesn't move. And the closing of the movie, this isn't a spoiler, this is just speaking to her great acting, features her just staring at the camera for 2 minutes straight. How many actors have we seen do these kinds of things? Mia Goth really pushes the boundaries of what an actor can do with her face and her body in this movie. And like I said, that juxtaposition between the candy-colored world, the vibrant art direction, and what is happening with her internally is just, it's a feat. She's fantastic in this movie.
Nice. Well, Jackson, is there a performance that you found really memorable, whether or not you love the movie they were in?
Yes. And this one's also a silly one to shout out, but it stuck with me since I watched it back when it released on streaming in February, March or something like that. It's Ben Affleck in Deep Water. Deep Water is the newest thriller from Adrian Lyne, who made like Fatal Attraction, the master of these 80s, 90s trash thrillers. Ben Affleck is married to Ana de Armas in the movie, and Ana de Armas's character keeps taking on new suitors, and they keep mysteriously dying. And people suspect Ben Affleck is killing these people, but there's no exact proof. Ben Affleck is really, really funny in the movie. I think it's a good evolution of his performance in Gone Girl, which was sort of a, oh, did this guy kill his wife? I bet this guy killed his wife performance. He seems like kind of a jerk. And he's kind of a jerk in this movie, too. He will just throw around these empty threats towards these other men. He'll sort of like tease them and taunt them and be like, oh, maybe I will kill you, maybe I won't, you don't know, ha 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 ha. But he's really in on the joke. He is very physically imposing, which is also very funny in the movie. It's a full understanding of what his star persona is, and it's just such a treat to see him in an adult thriller like this. And he's, everyone in that movie's on exactly the same page, in my opinion, which is not what the critical consensus was around it. But I had a great time with it and with its performance.
Why did you think it was silly to shout this out? Because it was Affleck or because he's so big?
No, one, I just think Ben Affleck's silly. But one, the movie was not praised at all. It was very much largely dismissed as ridiculous, preposterous at the time it came out. It was dancing around a theatrical release throughout the pandemic, and eventually they just decided, oh, let's just dump this on Hulu, I think. Which is cool, because I watched it at home with my friends and had a great time with it. But I feel like it's silly in that regard. But it's just one of those performances that I kept watching movies throughout the year. I kept watching performances. And that one just kept staying at the top of the shelf for me for some reason.
Interesting. Jackson Kim Murphy, Associate News Editor for Variety. Dave Schilling, Contributing Writer at LA Times Image. Kristen Meinzer, co-host of the podcast Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. They are our panel of film critics. And we also want to hear from you, listeners. What movies affected you in 2022? Tell us after the break. You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
What is that? I got bored one day. And I put everything on a bagel. Everything. All my hopes and dreams, my old report cards, every breed of dog, every last personal ad on Craigslist. Sesame, poppy seed, salt.
That's a clip from Everything, Everywhere, All at Once, a film that made waves in 2022. And that's what we're talking about this hour, the films of 2022 that you'll remember and why. You can tell us at 866-733-6786. You can email us, forum@kqed.org. You can post on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum. Tell us why you loved it, but don't spoil them for those of us who have not seen it yet. Kristen Meinzer is co-host of the podcast Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. Dave Schilling is contributing writer for LA Times Image. Jackson Kim Murphy is associate news editor at Variety, telling us their picks for movies that you should not miss if you did not get to see a lot of movies in 2022. Also, some great performances. Dave, I didn't get to ask you before the break what performances you liked.
Well, I'll keep it tight because I know Kristen likes shorter things, so I'll keep my response short. I loved Kate Blanchett in Tar. I think most people would agree. She's probably the front runner to win the Best Actress Oscar this year. Just really wonderful character study kind of work. Very subtle when it has to be, very big when it has to be. I go back to Barbarian. I love Justin Long in that movie. I think he was, it had to be a perfect performance. As I said, there is a point in the movie where it pivots to become something completely different for a little bit. And if you don't like, or at least enjoy watching Justin Long's character in that film, the movie falls apart. So he really had to carry a heavy load when this transition happens in the movie. And he's just really entertaining from start to finish in that role. It's very complicated. I think that's it. Also Greta Gerwig in White Noise. A lot of people haven't seen this yet because it's not out on Netflix, but it came out in New York and LA for, I think, a couple weeks. And I saw it, and she's remarkable. She does so much with a largely mute performance up until a big kind of monologue at the end that she nails. And she really embodies the characters that I imagined from the book. She is that character, and she does a great job.
Looking forward to White Noise. Well, this listener writes, the outfit was really great. It kept the story moving and left the audience in the dark just enough to create a truly suspenseful mystery. Andy writes, I know it was considered a flop, but I really enjoyed The Northman by Robert Eggers, a nearly flawless epic film. Can your guests offer an opinion on why it didn't connect with audiences? Anybody want to weigh in on whether they think The Northman should have gotten more than it did in terms of, yeah, go ahead, Kristen.
Yeah, I think that there were some issues with The Northman, beginning with the movie posters. I don't know if you remember the fiasco, but they forgot to put the title on the movie posters when they were advertising the movie. So it was a little confusing. Like, what is this advertising? Is it a mail order product for, fashion from the Dark Ages? Is this a makeup brand? Or like, it was just very confusing. Is this for a TV show? So I think the advertising campaign was part of the problem, unfortunately. But also, I was not a huge fan of the movie myself, and I think it's a movie that just took itself so seriously. It's very dark. It's very male, male-centric, male perspective, male rage, male anger at fathers, but there was zero levity. It's a very dark movie visually as well as psychologically. And I don't know if a movie that is that epic, that dark, that long, that confusing in its ad campaign is going to appeal to people right now at this point in history.
Well, it's a good category to think about films that didn't get their due in your opinions, guests. So Dave, what is a smaller movie, or it didn't need to be a smaller movie necessarily, but a film that you thought was underrated?
I really love Confess Fletch, starring John Hamm. It's an adaptation of and a reboot of the Fletch novel series. I'm sure people are familiar with the Chevy Chase movie Fletch from the 80s. Yep. This is very much not that. That was a Chevy Chase vehicle that had a lot of kind of wacky disguises and makeup effects and things that he did in that film. It was closer, I think, to a Pink Panther movie in terms of slapstick and absurdity. Whereas this new version of Fletch is much closer to the novel in terms of the tone and the way that the comedy is portrayed. It's not quite as over the top or silly. It's more about wordplay and kind of the wittiness of these characters, particularly John Hamm as Fletch. And I don't think anyone has ever really figured out what to do with John Hamm in a movie. Obviously, he's an amazing actor and is so great in Mad Men, but he obviously wants to be a comedic actor. He's very good at it. And this is the first time he's been able to use his sort of deadpan sense of humor, which I think he used very well as Don Draper in a feature film leading man performance. And unfortunately, Miramax kind of dumped this movie into theaters a few months ago and then threw it on VOD. Now it's on Showtime, I believe. It's much better than the reputation I think it got because it was dumped. But here's the thing, and I wanted to say this about The Northman, but I think it's true of any movie that flops. It's because you really have to encourage people to go to the theater. You have to give them a reason to go to a movie theater and say, this is a spectacle. This is a conversation that people are going to be having about this movie. You need to see it as soon as possible. There's something special. There's something you're getting out of it. If it's a Marvel movie with big budget special effects or, you know, tie-ins to other movies that you, so you have to see it to understand the next one or the one before that. There's a reason to go to the theater and see it as soon as possible. There's no reason to go see Confess Fletch in a theater. You might as well wait till it's on Showtime or it's on Amazon Prime or whatever. You might as well wait for The Northman to show up on streaming because it doesn't say you have to go see it. It doesn't have the buzz around it. It doesn't have the value proposition that says I'm going to spend $20 plus parking plus food to see it. Avatar 2, maybe people will say that because it's a 3D spectacle. So it's just, unfortunately, small movies don't really have the reason for being in the theater right now.
It's a good point. What do you think, Jackson? I think you also liked Confess Fletch and thought it, it should have deserved a little bit more attention than it got.
No, Confess Fletch rocks. it's, just a great ensemble. Everyone's no perfect in it. Very funny in an cartoonish way. Everyone's just it has very concise characterizations. But I agree with Dave. Confess Fletch is funnily the only movie I have seen twice this year, and I probably wouldn't have done that if it wasn't available on home video immediately. I'm just one and done. I take my ball and go home with the movie after I watch it. But a friend came over the next day and I was like, Confess Fletch was really good. He said, oh, okay, let's watch it. And then I just flipped it back on again 2 days later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's terrific. But I agree. I think a movie needs to be more of an event. It needs to be perceived as that sort of thing these days in order to get people out to a theater.
Was there anything else besides Confess Fletch that you really enjoy that maybe didn't do great at the box office or get to the box office?
I was, this one did get to the box office and then it didn't do super well. Super well is putting it politely. It's Michael Bay's Ambulance, also from the spring, and another movie that I watched early in the year. And then as I watched more stuff, just continued to stay around in those upper echelons. I've always been a mild defender of Michael Bay. I've always liked his craft. But this is the first movie I've seen where I actually really cared about the characters in the movie and cared what was going to happen to them, which is a stunning turn for him, honestly. It has the premise of two brother bank robbers hijack an ambulance to escape the robbery. And they're just in an ambulance the whole movie with this, with the medical worker also in the ambulance. And it's a premise where you think, I don't know how they're going to sustain that for a little over 2 hours. And then somehow it does. It's this great Los Angeles panorama. It keeps picking up new characters on the law enforcement side or on street crime. Just these new colorful people that really makes the whole painting of the city elaborate and delightful. It's really, really, really good.
Well, both you and Dave brought up spectacle films, and it felt like, Dave, there were a lot of them this year, or maybe it just always feels like that with spectacle films, but was there one that you really enjoyed? Like one that you think was worth seeing if people missed it?
Like an expensive action movie?
Yeah.
Oh boy. I don't know. that is a tough thing to ask me, because I do feel like this was maybe one of the worst years for blockbusters. I don't really feel like there was anything that wowed me that was expensive. I feel like this was such a great year for smaller movies. Nope was probably the best example of a blockbuster. And it's interesting to call it that, because it is a personal movie from a director who made his name, Jordan Peele, made his name making movies about very esoteric problems. Mm. Problems that, you know, I have or he has, but, you know, people that aren't Black in America maybe don't feel those same things, but he makes universal movies that are also deeply personal. And those are the things that I get excited about. I don't really get excited to see the latest Marvel movie anymore. And that's too bad, because there was a time when they were very exciting to watch. The early days of Iron Man and Captain America, Incredible Hulk, like these are movies that were kind of off center and strange. But if I'm going to go see a DC movie like Black Adam, for instance, which I thought was truly, truly unwatchable, you know, I'm not going to get that same feeling of the idiosyncratic. It now feels like product. And there are a lot of those movies that are coming out this year, last year, that really lack that strangeness. Moonfall is here. Here's an example of a movie that's absurd, that feels like it could only be made by Roland Emmerich, is Moonfall. Let's have some more Moonfalls and fewer Black Panther Wakanda Forevers, please.
Well, Gabriel writes the worst movie of 2022 was Amsterdam. So disagreed with our listener who called in ahead of the show. Gabriel writes, I can't. Why didn't anyone warn me? It seemed as if every character was in their own separate awful film. The dialogue was so inane and contrived and poorly delivered. I laughed at almost every line. I think the studio should be subject to a class action lawsuit to recover the money and time everyone spent to be subjected to this atrocity. Wow, Gabriel, tell us how you really feel. But earlier, Kristen, you were making the point that we only have so much time to watch films. So do you have one that you would say we can afford to miss?
Oh, my gosh. That was like a big one. I agree. Amsterdam. Yes, I'm 100% on board with that listener. Amsterdam, it just seemed like it was never ending. On top of each of the actors feeling like they're each in a different terrible movie, on top of the fact that I could not figure out for the life of me what the plot of the movie was. I hated Amsterdam. It was definitely one of the worst movies of the year, hands down, absolutely. So yes, I would say you can absolutely afford to miss that one. You can afford to miss the spectacle of Bullet Train, which also felt overly long and relying very heavily on a lot of razzle dazzle and art direction, but not necessarily on story. If you do want to invest in a longer movie, a couple I would say are worth it are Triangle of Sadness. Triangle of Sadness is about 2.5 hours. Tapping into, again, that divide between rich and poor, some class rage happening in this movie, some people who are on a yacht, a luxury yacht, who, you know, may or may not deal with some comeuppance with, you know, what happens when the upstairs and the downstairs confront each other over certain differences and so on. So Triangle of Sadness, it is gross, it is funny, it is surprising, and it is well over 2 hours long. Everything Everywhere All at Once, which has already come up a couple of times in today's show, is also, in my opinion, a little bit too long, but there is heart there. There is spectacle. Michelle Yeoh is just fantastic in it. It has to do with regrets. What could have been? What if my life was different? What if I didn't work, you know, in this laundromat? What if my life was more spectacular? But it's a beautiful story of maybe letting go of those what ifs and embracing what we have and the tiny little moments in life that make things magical in their own way. Tiny little insignificant things that maybe don't seem worthy of a blockbuster, but really are in this movie.
Yes. Well, I'm kind of sensing a little bit of a theme, Kristen, in the films that you liked with regard to class tensions, or maybe some class resentment is part of all of that. But we've got also some callers waiting. Let me go to Michael in Walnut Creek. Hi, Michael. You're on.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Yes, I just wanted to weigh in on The Northman. I think that the reason that it underwhelmed a lot of people was that it was expected to be some sort of, you know, silly, fun Conan-type movie. I know that's why a lot of people who saw it disliked it, and not something that was actually trying to recreate the atmosphere of the Icelandic sagas like Gunnlaugsson's In the Shadow of the Raven, which, I think The Northman was the equal of In the Shadow of the Raven, and it was nice to see it done with a really nice budget. And I also thought it was hilarious just because, you know, having people, you know, speak in that Icelandic epic fashion, Father, I will avenge you. Mother, I will save you. Fulner, I will kill you. I will cut the thread of my fate. I mean, to me, that stuff is just golden. So I would have seen it in a theater had I known it was so good.
Whoa. All right, Michael. Well, appreciate that. And thanks for calling in. Let me go to Jordan in Berkeley. Hi, Jordan.
Hey there. How are you?
Well, what would you like to say?
I would just love to give a plug to Top Gun Maverick. I saw it 10 times.
Wow.
And I saw it 5 times with D-Box in the theater, which I thought was going to be really silly, which turned out to be amazing. But I just feel like it was a great character-driven movie. It wasn't based on CGI effects. It was real flying. There wasn't a lot of blood and guts, and there was an actual relationship in there with people who were not in their teens and not in their 20s that was actually kind of character-driven, and it was great. And I would say House of Gucci for best unintentional comedy and Drive My Car for best drama.
All right, Jordan. Well, thanks for those recommendations. And I know you are not alone in the way that people love Top Gun, especially for also the whole nostalgia piece of that. We're getting a lot of recommendations online. Let me go to Judd's comment. Judd writes, God's Country, with an amazing provocative performance by Tandy Newton. The film and Newton's performance should be up for an award. She plays a retired New Orleans cop who left the city post-Katrina, moving to remote Montana with her mother. Soon thereafter, a culture clash with locals slowly escalates into violent confrontations. Newton carries the film. Jason tweets, Marcel the Shell with shoes on made me laugh and cry. All the emotions, another listener writes, Bros was a very well-made and well-written film. Silly, funny, sexy, and very underrated. All right, listeners, if you want to share your favorite movie from 2022 and why, you can by emailing forum@kqed.org, posting it on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at KQED Forum, calling us 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. If there's one that you think we can miss, you can also tell us that too. But you can also tell us if there's a movie recommendation you are looking for, a type of movie that you'd like to see. I'm sure our panel can tell you. Stay with us. More after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
I did not have an easy life. Please, I want to be here with the others. I want to fight for my king.
Your tears mean nothing. They be a warrior, you must kill your tears.
Oh, that was from The Woman King, which came up a couple times earlier in the show as a movie of 2022, whether one they enjoyed or one they did not. We're also talking with Kristen Meinzer, co-host of the podcast Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen, Dave Schilling, contributing writer for LA Times Image, and Jackson Kim Murphy, associate news editor for Variety, about the films that they'll remember from 2022 and why. Of course, you can always share yours, listeners, by posting on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at KQED Forum, by emailing forum at kqed.org, or by calling 866-733-6786. A listener writes, "Don't Worry, Darling" was unwatchable. What do your guests think? Did you see this, Jackson Kim Murphy?
I did see Don't Worry, Darling. I saw it, I believe, in the way it was meant to be seen at a opening night screening at the Grove here in Los Angeles. Packed house. Half the crowd was there, I think, to guffaw at Harry Styles, and the other half of the crowd was there to giggle because Harry Styles was in a movie. So it was a really, really lively crowd. I don't think it's a very successful movie. But at the same time, I do appreciate there are all these behind the scenes news and rumors of scandals on the production of that film. Yes. And the looky-loo aspect of it lent itself to a really charged theater experience that, even though I didn't love the movie, I do treasure that experience that I had that day.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Kristen, did you want to jump in? Sounded like it.
Yeah, I actually don't think the movie is terrible. I think it got raked over the coals, partly because of a lot of the drama that was happening behind the scenes. You know, Olivia Wilde dating Harry Styles. Is it inappropriate for an older director to, you know, start dating their younger actor in the movie? The drama that supposedly was happening between her and Florence Pugh, people being fired from the movie, people spitting on each other at various press events, yada, yada, yada. There was so much drama that was supposedly happening around this movie. And I think that that was unfortunate because the movie itself is not terrible. In some ways, I think if you go into it thinking like, let's just accept this as a fun summer movie with great costumes, with, you know, delightful mid-century furniture everywhere. If we don't take it too seriously and see what it's trying to get at, I think we can have fun watching the movie. I'm not saying it's perfect by any means, but I'm just saying, I think because of all of the hullabaloo around it, I went in with the lowest of expectations, and expecting a zero, was delighted when I came out thinking, oh, this was a six.
I think it's not terrible isn't necessarily the biggest endorsement, but I appreciate what you said, Kristen. Let me go to Spencer in Santa Clara. Hi, Spencer. Hi, Spencer, you're on.
Glad to get on. Glad to get on the radio. I loved the Banshees at Inisherin. Did you already talk about that?
Or did I don't think it? We did. Wait, did you talk about that, Dave Schilling? Well, first, Spencer, what did you like about it?
Well, I loved it because it's very Irish, dark, but funny. The dark humor, two characters, one older man and the one younger man. The older man decides that he doesn't want to be friends with the younger man anymore.
And younger man
keeps pursuing him. And I won't tell you anything more because it would be a spoiler.
Yeah. Thanks, Spencer. Dave, I feel like I saw it on your list.
It is on my list. I loved it. I thought it was a real return to form for Martin McDonagh, who took a lot of criticism for Three Billboards, which is a movie that I didn't hate as much as most people did. I would say it's a six on the Don't Worry, Darling scale to that movie. But this one was just, it was a really interesting portrait of both an intimate relationship between two male friends and a commentary on conflicts, be they local or global, and why we hate and how we escalate conflicts unnecessarily, the way in which people create and facilitate grudges, and why it's important to let things go. And these are two characters who don't know how to let it go, and that is contrasted with the Civil War in Ireland. And I'm a sucker for any time you can take a personal story and then have it kind of mirror a bigger, wider conflict. And it's just, you know, as we say, the cliche, it was really, really well acted. It was. The great performances from Colin Farrell in this movie, and Brendan Gleeson is wonderful. Just a great small movie that, by the way, I didn't know it was a period piece until the first like 5 minutes. I just assume Irish people all dress like that all the time. But no, this is set in the 1900s. So disabuse yourself of the notion that you'll see an iPhone in this movie.
Well, this listener writes, I've been to a lot of preview screenings. Spoiler alert was amazing, and so was Babylon. But Emma Thompson's performance in Good Luck to You, Leo Grande was very real. Another listener, Rudy, tweets, my fave sci-fi film of 2022, Nope, by Jordan Peele, horror film, Barbarian by Zach Kriger, comic sketch writer and comedic actor. Wow, already two of the ones that you mentioned, Dave, there. I wonder if this documentary film that Rudy has is also one you like. Meet Me in the Bathroom by Will Lovelace, about the New York City music scene of the later 90s and early 2000s. Did you
see that? This guy has great taste. This person is either me and I'm disassociating, or it's a family member. Meet Me in the Bathroom I have not seen yet, but I'm very excited about it because that was the music scene that I kind of grew up with, and that was the music I was listening to, is that early 2000s garage rock revival, The Strokes, Interpol, Yeah, all of that stuff. And it's from what I've been told, a very, very well done portrayal of that moment in time.
Well, a listener writes, why are we talking only American movies? The Swimmers is in English, is a great movie, uplifting, a commentary on the human condition. Oh, The Swimmers, it's actually in my queue. I'm excited to see that one. Guillermo writes, my favorite film of the year is actually a Mexican one. My friend is a filmmaker and worked on a project called Cuando Cae la Noche. It deals with aging and the role of single men in that stage of life and how those stereotypes and roles evolve in that phase of solitude. We're getting pretty close to the end of the hour. I'm wondering if there are any films that you are excited to watch, upcoming movies. One of the listeners mentioned that they've been to see a lot of previews. Jackson, is there one that you are looking forward to and haven't seen yet?
From this year or for next year?
That's coming up. It can be later this year or next year.
Next year, I believe, launching appropriately around Valentine's Day, is, of course, Magic Mike's Last Dance. The third and ostensibly final entry in the male stripping saga. Steven Soderbergh, one of my favorite filmmakers, he's back at the helm and he's back in theaters after making a ton of streaming movies over the years. I'm just really excited to see what brought him and Channing Tatum back together for one more of these, and why they feel the need to give this character a proper send-off. Soderbergh has described the film as a sort of all that jazz-esque drama, which sounds insane to me. And there are reports that it ends with a 30-minute dance sequence, which will be incredible because it's 30 minutes long. And oh, it's, yeah.
What about Avatar? Are you looking forward to Avatar?
Oh, yes. So I am looking forward to Avatar. I can say I was at the Avatar screening here in Los Angeles last night, actually. So I'm no longer looking forward to it. And I'm not sure. I don't want to break embargo rules. I know the social embargo is up, but the review embargo is not. So to be safe, I will just say my social reaction was, it's really cool.
All right. All right. Kristen, what about you? Thanks for a very revealing social. Upcoming movie.
Well, I'll tell you one movie I am not looking forward to is the Avatar movie. I hated the first one so much, and I absolutely have zero interest in seeing the second one. The first one just felt like torture to me. The uncanny valley animation, the terrible storyline, again, overly long. I am looking forward to avoiding that movie, but I am looking forward to seeing something that just came out that is going to be very light, very funny, and very violent if the trailers are telling the truth. And that is Violent Night, not Silent Night, Violent Night, which is the story of Santa being called in to help a family after a violent break-in during the Christmas season. And Santa does not hold back. He's got lots of coal to administer and lots of violence. And to me, it just looks hilarious. I've always loved Christmas movies. I like any chance to change what a Christmas movie can be, whether it's, you know, Die Hard or, you know, any other movie that just tries to shake up what the genre is. Spirited this year tried to do that. So I'm looking forward to Violent Night.
Violent Night. You know, Kristen, if I remember correctly, you are good on the holiday movies. But I'm also just curious, is there a holiday movie you always watch at this time of year, regardless of what year it came out? Like, it didn't have to come out in 2022.
Yes. I do make a habit of, from the day after Halloween to the 12th day of Christmas, of watching one Christmas movie a day for that entire time.
Wow. Okay.
So I love Christmas movies, but certain ones I watch over and over again. It's A Wonderful Life, of course, Miracle on 34th Street. But a couple of lesser known ones that I return to over and over again are The Mistletoes, starring Tia Mowry, and as the villain in the movie, Tori Spelling. And it is a choral smackdown during the holiday season. It is hilarious. And you know, with a cast like that, what's not to love? And I also love Christmas in Connecticut, starring Barbara Stanwyck as an intrepid journalist who's constantly put on the beat to write about home economics, about cooking, about housekeeping, about stuff she has no interest or knowledge in, and about how she is kind of forced to be put on the spot with her expertise in those areas, that expertise she does not have, and wackiness ensues. I love any female journalist just doing things her own way, especially during Christmas time. So that one's a classic for me.
Speaking of female journalists, Mary Lou writes, she said was a powerful, gripping expose of our times, well-acted and fascinating insight into how journalists doggedly pursue these stories. It filled me with pride and admiration for their work. I do remember interviewing both of those journalists on Forum and looking forward to seeing She Said. We're talking with Kristen Meinzer, co-host of the podcast Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. Also Dave Schilling, contributing writer for LA Times Image, and Jackson Kim Murphy, associate news editor for Variety. We're talking, you guessed it, about the films of 2022. It is December after all, and you are listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Jackson, is there a holiday movie you rewatch?
I honestly don't. I'm not the one with agency of the movie watching when I go home for the holidays. So I don't really have the my own picks, but each year my mom does always run a marathon of Bridget Jones' Diary, The Holiday, and Love Actually, movies that I've now probably not seen front to back in quite a few years, but you know, I'll mill in and out of the living room and I'll see them all going. I hate Love Actually. I'm moderate on Bridget Jones' Diary, and The Holiday is essentially a high masterpiece of insane people. But I look forward to returning home within the next few weeks and running all three back later this year.
Well, your mom's taste is very consistent. What about you, Dave? A holiday movie you rewatch?
Oh, boy. I mean, The Holiday are definitely a time for movie going for me and for watching movies at home, because you spend a lot of time on the couch, as I'm sure we all do. The only holiday movie that I watch regularly is Scrooged with Bill Murray. It's a retelling of A Christmas Carol, but in a contemporary 80s setting. Scrooge is not called Scrooge, and now he's a TV executive. So it's kind of a TV satire in addition to being a retelling of A Christmas Carol. But what I do with my tradition on the holidays is to watch James Bond movies. These are not Christmas films or holiday films in any way, except for, I guess, The World Is Not Enough, because one of the characters' name is Christmas Jones. But for the most part, I watch these movies because they were on TV. There were marathons of James Bond movies on TBS every year during Thanksgiving or Christmas, you know, those holidays. And I just got used to that idea of turning these kind of big, silly spectacles on and doing things around the house or eating and watching these things that don't demand a lot of attention, but are constantly bombarding you with imagery and jokes and action set pieces and that kind of thing. So I recommend everybody watch an old James Bond movie like Moonraker or something.
All when right. they have a chance. Bond for the holidays. The listener writes, by far, Elvis is my favorite of the year, and I can't wait to see Austin Butler in new movies. Christian Bale is fantastic, and the historic rise of fascism in the U.S. is bone-chilling in Amsterdam. Wow, a lot of range of opinions on Amsterdam from listeners and our guests today. Another listener writes, Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris was absolutely lovely, hopeful, stylish, and a celebration of overcoming heartache. Robert writes, Where the Crawdads Sing, everyone I know who has seen it loved it. Chris writes, Causeway had maybe the most under-the-radar best acting performance by Brian Tyree Henry and Jennifer Lawrence. And T. West's Dual Drop of X and The Amazing Pearl were a great accomplishment in one year. Not sure if any of you have any reactions to the movies that just got mentioned there.
I hated Pearl.
Oh, no, Dave!
I thought it was deeply annoying. That music and like the tone of it was so broad and big and aggressively campy in a way that just felt like I wanted to be anywhere else. That said, I loved X because it was a horror movie and it knew that it was just a horror movie. And Pearl tried to be this kind of character study of a character I kind of found loathsome. And irritating. I did not have any empathy for her situation. Sure, she had a terrible childhood and a bad family and stuff, but the performance from Mia Goth was so outrageous, so over the top, and so divorced from the human race that it just felt like pantomime to me. And I wanted to
scream.
You're saying
that like it's a bad thing.
Yes, I know. I'm aware.
I'm yes. Loving these differences of opinion on these films. It really helps me watch them when I do, you know, with a nuanced lens. Dave, you are the only one I did not ask about upcoming movies you're excited for. We have a minute left. Just tell me really quick. Yeah,
real quick. I'm really excited about Dune Part 2 and Indiana Jones, The Dial of Destiny. I was not a big fan of Top Gun Maverick. I know people have talked about it on the Twitter feed. Not for me. I'm tired of reboots, sequels, remakes, this kind of thing. But I am a sucker when nostalgia affects me and when I'm nostalgic for things from my childhood that I liked. And I loved Indiana Jones, so I'm very excited to see this series kind of wrap up.
Indiana Jones, you're right. It did feel like there were a lot of sequels, reboots, and so on in 2022. Well, Dave Schilling, as always, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Dave Schilling, contributing writer for LA Times Image. Jackson Kim Murphy, so glad to have you on today. Thanks so much.
Thanks a bunch for having me.
Jackson Kim Murphy, associate news editor at Variety. Kristen Meinzer, co-host of the podcast, Movie Therapy with Rafer and Kristen. Thanks for coming back, Kristen.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners, for sharing your picks. We're going to try to compile those for you and make them available. But in the meantime, we are going to go out with a song from a movie Dave loved, Top Gun. Just kidding. Sorry, Dave. This is the song from Top Gun. Caroline Smith produced today's segment on the films of 2022. I'm Mina Kim. You're listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.